Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
But I feel like I've known always, since a very young, like junior high girl, I've had a very strong sense of myself, but it was almost framed like, I want to like myself. I am amazing. I am really powerful. And yet, right? And the messaging I got and that I witnessed in my life was kind of the opposite of like, no, you're not powerful. Like, or you need to quiet that power. You need to quiet that power. Especially as a woman, right? You know, like even like, no, little girl, don't wear that bikini. That's dangerous. Like, and I'm standing in front of the mirror like, wow, I got the leopard print. That looks good. You know, I'm like nine. And the message to me was, no, that's too much. So I think I have that feeling in me. And again, I want to use like the word resonance. Like there's a, I feel it. I feel the power. And when I'm tapped into myself and when I'm grounded, you know, back straight.
Today, I am joined by Melanie Cooper Pennington, who was our juror for our 2021 iteration of Painting at Night, going live in Fort Wayne, Indiana in November. I'm so thrilled to have gotten to know Melanie and have her jury this exhibition for us. And I can't wait to interview her as an artist to share more about her life and her work with all of you today. So Melanie teaches sculpture in Bloomington, Indiana at Indiana University. Tired of fitting sculpture around her work as an interior designer in Chicago, after 12 years, she left design and transitioned to graduate school to focus full-time on her sculpture practice. With the loving support of her partner and two kids, she received her MFA in 2016 and has not looked back. She still practices interior design, is a bar workout devotee, walks dogs and cats, and acts as the emotional center for her family. Her motto is, more is more. Residencies include Vermont Studio Center Fellowship, Acre Residency, Haystack Mountain School of Craft, Anderson Ranch, and more. Recent exhibitions include a solo show at ArtLink Contemporary Gallery in Fort Wayne. There's the connection there. And group shows at Acre Projects in Chicago and Manifest Gallery in Cincinnati. Her public park installations include showing with the Chicago Park District Sculpture in the Parks and Installation Nation at the Indianapolis Art Center. Melanie, thanks so much for being here. I can't wait to hear more about your own art practice, because we've been in lots of conversations about art, but about all of the work, great work coming out of the artist mother community. So now it's time to hear more from you. So thank you.
I'm excited. Thank you for having me. And yeah, it's been amazing to, I was so honored to be asked in the first place. I'll talk more about why I'm such a fan of the Artist Mother podcast, but I was very honored to jury that show. And yes. I'm so excited to see the work in person.
I know. I can't wait.
I really can't wait.
I know. It's like, there's just nothing like, you know, and I know that's like, you spend your whole life saying that, but I don't know. There's just nothing like seeing great work in person, you know?
I think we really, especially, I mean, I feel like we can say that with confidence now after COVID.
Yes.
Like there really is nothing like seeing work in person.
Nothing. I know. And it's going to be a great
unless
show.
You're watching a film, then
that's
all right.
True. If
that's
the fantastic. Medium was designed for yes. virtual viewing, then that truth does not apply. But
yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to your childhood, Melanie. Can you connect me to something or point to something that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today?
Yeah. Kaylin, your questions, man, you got a lot of intense questions.
I get right there.
I love it. Let's just go. Okay, let's go to your childhood.
Yes.
We know that's where it all begins.
Yep, it starts with Melanie Child. Yep.
Melanie the Child.
And, yes.
And what's interesting is that you're right. It does start with Melanie the Child. And especially for me, as I kind of, so I found sculpture when I was 19, and then I went to graduate school when I was 37, right? So the processes that I do now in sculpture are much more like large scale machinery and tools and things like mm-hmm. this. And so I've had a lot of time in the last 10 years to kind of think back on why did it take so long to kind of, because it feels now like I felt as a child. Mm-hmm. And let's say like my absolute favorite childhood memories are creating villages, flooding our backyard with the hose. I grew up in California, so there's mm-hmm. no water. So we would flood. My big brother and I would flood our backyard, literally flood it. And then
which it probably floods in, you know, an inch of water.
It's probably true.
Very yeah. easily.
Probably. Very easily. And then we would make mud cities mm-hmm. and then we would have mud fights. So and my dad built all of our playground equipment and sandboxes and all the obstacle courses and things. And it's just a very tactile mm-hmm. Experience of growing up. And there was a lot of full body digging, building, mm-hmm. Moving. And I really, that is my art experience. And that is yeah. my art experience now. It took a long time. It's also, I think, just a deeply like human mm-hmm. experience, right? A childhood experience. But that was absolutely my happy place was mud and water. Mud and water. And that's just still true.
Yes. I love that.
It's still true.
Did you play with like ants and bugs? I remember digging holes, and then we thought we were like so brilliant because we would lay pieces of grass over the holes, and we thought the ants would like walk on the grass and fall in the hole. We thought it
like
was
a,
like,
yeah, like a trap,
like an ant trap. Yeah,
like an ant trap.
I just remember yes. building all these little ant traps and holes.
Yes, and or like laying. Hiding the matchbox cars like yes. down below so they can like jump out and like yep. surprise the person that's coming this way. And yeah,
and you just think you're
so fun.
You think you're so smart and you got it all. Like, yes. I'm gonna do this and it's gonna be brilliant. And
it is.
I know. And I want my yeah. kids to continue that feeling of confidence.
Yeah. Well, and then it was so hard to get my kids to go outside and play. And I was so confused by that. Wow.
Just blame your partner. It's the different DNA.
Okay. I actually blame technology.
Well, that too. Yes. Yeah. Okay, Melanie, I want you to describe what your work looks like. We will obviously be sharing lots of images of your work when we publish this episode. But I always like this practice of like kind of hearing an artist talk through like what their work looks like visually and kind of with this idea that maybe somebody has never seen it before. So how do you describe your work? Like what's your elevator pitch?
Yes. Well, it's grounded in the figure because I kind of originally and always started with sculpting bodies. But basically, here you go. Just imagine a large manatee stuck in a cage, or a large elephant or rhinoceros missing a head and stuck in a cage or mm-hmm. trapped. And mm-hmm. then put some fur on there or some other like gooey materials. You got to go large. You've got to mm-hmm. be, it's like
very
that
large.
Much bigger than you. They're a bit like larger than life stuffed animals, some of them, but there's a darkness too. There's an approachability and a darkness to all of them. They're all sort of like hobbled in some mm-hmm. ways. So I make these giant beast forms. I call them my humanimals. And they're basically just abstracted anthropomorphic beast mm-hmm. forms mm-hmm. expressing some sort of internal psychological state of my own concocting. And then the materials are all very specific to what I'm trying to convey, whether that's very soft and gentle and approachable, or like a shell, hard, crisp.
Tell me about some of the specific materials that you've worked with, and maybe like some of those specific themes you were trying to communicate with those materials. Like if you could talk about a few different bodies of work.
Well, so one of the, I think this was a kind of an answer to one of your questions that I was thinking about down the way. I don't even remember what the question was, but like, what is my art about? I would point to, so there's one piece, it's called Everyone is an Insider. It's a tall, it's 9 feet tall. It's almost a larvae type shape of in fur. It's the one in a ivory, buttery color fur. And then it's surrounded and it's being poked. It's being entrapped by sticks, right? Mm. So it's like, and I love this piece. And it's just that reflection. It's an echo of my feeling of as a very sensitive person, HSP, highly sensitive person. Mm-hmm. So using that material mix of the hard and the soft, the inner material being soft. I mean, it's pretty basic, but it really works.
Yeah.
when you both see it in person and just even in a photograph, I think that it conveys that feeling of why am I here? That's this one. Everyone is an insider. I make part of why I make the pieces large is because I would give them a little bit of agency in largeness and strength, like kind of like you imagine the strength of a, like we don't really approach elephants, because we can't, but it would be, we could be decimated, right? We could be hurt by the scale and the strength of these mammals that are that much larger and stronger than we are. So, but I see that when I'm flipping, how I'm using that is psychologically, I'm trying to remind myself and others that we're that strong. Like you don't need to be in that cage. Are you in that cage? Why are you in that cage? Like perhaps what would it take for you to move outside of that space? Why are you staying in a space that's hurting you? Yeah, there's a lot of that. Just this constant back and forth questioning of like, why aren't you accessing the strength that you have? That's why I make them so large.
Hi, I'm Mindy Whittock with the Artist Mother team. I wanted to take a moment to share about our Artist Mother Network. You have listened to the podcast and maybe follow along on Instagram, finding support and validation as an artist mother on these platforms. We have a space that offers a more personal experience in the Artist Mother community. Come join our Artist Mother Network, a place where more tangible friendships are created and resources for you as an artist and a mother are abundant. On the network, you will find groups to support your interests, like the Single Mothers Group. Through these subsets, I have personally found forever friends and strength in the wisdom and support of other women. Our network offers free artist talks on so many different topics. Jody Hayes recently gave us a tour of her studio and how she keeps her art life organized. We also have one workshop by an artist a month, offered to you for free with your membership. Tara Carpenter Estrada just walked our members through a trace monotype printing workshop that was so fun. All of our workshops and artist talks are recorded and saved on the network, so you can access them if you aren't able to attend live. I also co-host the morning show with Kaylin Butine. We start Monday mornings in community with you talking about topics deeply relatable in our artist mother identities. We have recently discussed how we can be fearless in our studios, what bravery looks like as an artist, and have shared in vulnerability and what makes us afraid. These morning shows are the best way to start the week. Please don't miss out on this opportunity to connect with us on a deeper level. Our network offers an affordable membership of $11 a month or $121 a year, and your first 2 months are free. This gives you access to our artist talks, workshops, morning show, exhibition opportunities, a growing resource library for artist mothers, and many support groups with other network members based on location and interests. The network also provides you the opportunity to take part in our leadership training so that you may become an artist mother community host in your own geographical area. The network has been such a wonderful source of friendship, community, and artist resources. I am so proud to be part of this artist mother world and am grateful I get to share it with you. I look forward to getting to know your magical self. I will see you on the network. You can find all the information you need to join on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com.
You talked about in your artist statement, like specifically using animals as inspiration that have this like element of, like as a human, your relationship in size to some of these very large animals just creates this feeling of awe and power and fear, maybe.
Yeah.
So I love that idea of like maybe wanting to instill some of that, like what you experience as a viewer when you see a blue whale, you know, like maybe I could look at you and see that same experience or see those same things and like, oh, she's so powerful and strong. But really what you're wanting is people to look at themselves and say,
right,
you know, like I have it within me to access, you know, to access that strength. And
that's it, Kaylin. That's it.
I feel like I basically just said back to you what you just said to me, but it's like I needed to process it for myself.
I appreciate that, because actually, I mean, that's really it. That's the feeling, right? Mm-hmm. And the resonance, that's mm-hmm. also know when I've gotten somewhere with the work, is that when you hit that resonance of, ooh, I feel slightly nervous around this thing, but I made this thing, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that like, that bounce of, it's the gift and the curse of being a human mammal, mm-hmm. which is that we think through all these things instead of just being them. We're constantly mm-hmm. critiquing them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yes, that's it. That's the draw towards mammals. The anthropomorphizing, part of why I abstract the animals is so I'm not completely like appropriating animal forms, mm-hmm. But it is very much a human narrative. Mm-hmm. But then, part of the inspiration for those and has come from watching the beasts of our earth get just mm-hmm. brutalized by mm-hmm. humans, which is just heartbreaking. So I think they're very powerful, beautiful shapes. That's the other aspect, of course, is I'm a very formal sculptor, I would say, mm-hmm. in some ways. I come from a tradition that is of the body and of more classical like training in the body, but then had a lot of heroes for a while in the modern sculptors, you know, mm-hmm. Noguchi and Brancusi and mm-hmm. just those forms. And those are the forms that I see when I'm looking at animals like mm-hmm. bison and rhinos and muskox. There's something so cows, those hip mm-hmm. bones, you know, they're just, I feel
have you
them.
Have you been to the Fort Wayne Zoo, or have you brought your kids to the Fort Wayne Zoo?
No.
You should go sometime next time you're up this way, because they have a great giraffe viewing station. Oh. And, you know, like you were talking about the hip bones of a cow, like giraffes are just one of those. I mean, I know obviously like giraffes are like huge and they're so awe-inspiring for their size, but just they have this like platform that's built kind of out into sort of the large grassy area that the giraffes are like housed in. And the platform is like raised up so that you're at the giraffe's height. So the giraffe can like come over and, you know, you're like right there. Like a lot of times in zoos, the giraffes are positioned lower than you so that they're at the height, the face is kind of closer to you. And here you're like raised up, but you still feel kind of part of their like sanctuary because they built it out into their cage sort of, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, it's just like our favorite part of that zoo. Cause just the way it's constructed, it is really beautiful. And just kind of getting to experience those animals up close is definitely something special. I'm wondering just about some maybe specific experiences that you've had in your own life, either with like experiencing animals like this, where you just have this like extreme tangible memory that inspired you to make work. I'll leave that. Have you ever been bucked off a horse?
Yes.
I mean, riding a horse, like riding a horse. Oh, you have horses. Oh,
I don't have them anymore, but I did have, I had them from age 11 to 14. I had horses.
That's like the perfect time for a young girl to have horses.
Oh, I know. No, you have no idea. It was
oh
like,
my gosh.
I lived in a log cabin in Massachusetts, and I went and walked down the street to the conservation field, and I tended the horses at the barn, the yellow barn. And I like, that was how I paid for my horse. I was like the hand. I'd have to get up every morning before school. Like it was full on Little House on the Prairie.
Yes, love it.
But it was also too much for me. And horses are actually not my jam, interestingly enough. They are my little sister's jam. You all should go check out her work, Susie Cooper Burgess. she makes giant, it's hilarious. She makes giant, like the size of this wall, paintings of horses. She's obsessed and she's painting in California and she does giant horses. So
awesome.
I don't know, you know, really where I came, my entrance into these animals and using this form in my work, because I didn't even enter grad school with work like this. I entered grad school with figurative work, partly because that was like my in into grad school, and ceramics really still respects and the figure, and so my perspective, and it was through researching fetish that my soul lit up with the animal forms in fetish objects, kind of, I mean, starting back, not that the caves of Lascaux are like fetish, but those, you know, just that kind of the subconscious idea of the bison traveling through time and space for 40,000 years and being significantly important for some reason to human life. And then there's a form in West Bamana, Africa. It's called a boli, B-O-L-I. Look them up. They're amazing, amazing forms. Also based loosely sometimes off of bison. And then I was grappling with that fetish also in Christian history and Catholic history. And trying to square, because I come from a very religious fundamentalist upbringing. So I was just trying to compare and square how, you know, power objects and the things we place power and divine, we seek divine interference in every, in all these different religions, right? And I was just particularly interested in the objects and that transference, because I feel that in art making to an extent, right? I feel that power transference into the object.
Well, it makes perfect sense with the kind of background in form and body, and then, like using these large animal figures to kind of be sort of your, I don't know, your models for exploring some of these things. Because I feel like if you, like if you were doing the work that you're doing, but you were using human forms, there would be a very different conversation that would be happening, right? Because there's just so...
There's too many associations.
Too loaded. Yeah.
That's too loaded.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So I
just kind of discreetly mix it in. Like I've highlighted, there are certain parts of a human body that I find particularly expressive and powerful. Mm-hmm. And it's usually the hips and the back, you know, or the joints, certain joints. Mm-hmm. And so you will find those in my beast forms. You can find that if you're looking, that influence. And I think then that's part of how I connect a human audience to the forms, because I think whether they know it or not, there's this resonance, because we respond to figurative work because we are figures, you know?
Okay. So the second part of that question 5 minutes ago that I was rambling on about was, I started with saying, like, have you had these physical experiences with these large animals that kind of inspired you? And then you kind of deconstructed that in a different way. But my second thought was just wanting to know if there were specific experiences in your life where you felt aware of your own strength and power, and maybe thematically that sort of influenced the work. I know, I asked the hard questions, don't I?
I love it. And, you know, I love that question.
I look at your work and I'm like, this must be a person who either strongly desires to have more strength and awareness of her strength and power, or who has had the joy of experiencing her strength through maybe resilience or, you know, whatever it might be. So I'm just curious, like,
what part of that? Yeah, gosh, Kaylin, that's so good. I at first feel, or what I feel like I've known always since a very young, like junior high girl, I've had a very strong sense of myself, but it was almost framed like, I want to like myself. I am amazing. I am really powerful. And yet, right. Mm-hmm. And the messaging I got and that I witnessed in my life was kind of the opposite of like, no, you're not powerful. Like, or you need to quiet that power. You need to quiet that power. Mm-hmm. Especially as a woman, right? You know, like even like, no, little girl, don't wear that bikini. That's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm standing in front of the mirror like, wow, I got the leopard. I got the leopard print. That looks good.
Yeah. You know,
I'm like 9. And the message to me was, no, that's too much. Mm-hmm. So I think I have that feeling in me. And again, I want to use like the word resonance. Like there's I feel it. I feel the power. And when I'm tapped into myself and when I'm grounded, you know, back straight. I did.
I'm like slumped over here, just hanging on to every word. I'm like, yes.
So what is interesting though, or it's not interesting, I think this is just, again, it's probably just very common, but it's a daily battle to getting to that straight back. I think the experience of, so I've had a couple forming experiences. I've battled chronic back pain since I was 15, and I had back surgery in 2016. So, and then I finally got out of pain 2 years later. So I've been out of pain for the most part for the first time in my life, or kind of in control of my physical body in a way that at least I'm, I feel sort of powerful, you know, in the last 3 years. So I think that definitely, and just that having to constantly try to, and I wanted to make work, right. And have children and then the work I was making was huge, and I will make giant log carvings, and I have to get people to help me, or I'd get hurt again and I'd be on my back, but I still, you know, I want to make work. So there's just been a very like mentally having to again and again and again and again remind myself, I guess of that power. But so there was that. And then I do want to say that the experience of going to grad school later was incredibly empowering to me, because it had been a goal since I was 21 when I graduated from college. My goal at that point had been to go to grad school, but I got this amazing opportunity to work for a multimillionaire who wanted me to put ice cream parlors in his offices in Chicago. So I was like, and who's going to pay me to do that? You know? So that detoured into a 12-year long profession in something I wasn't passionate about, but I was learning, and I was, there's lots of things. So when I finally made it to graduate school, and then when I also was able to kind of, it really did feel as though I was opening the lid on these ideas and desires and dreams. It was like I was finally able to open the lid and jump into that pool and go and build, you know, and it, that really, really was, just was, it's just wonderful. It's like really, really wonderful for me.
I have to say too, I kind of love that you didn't say motherhood, because I feel like that is like where a lot of people go initially when they talk about like, I realized I was so, I could do all the things because when I became a mom, because I feel like a lot of people don't feel that way. Like actually motherhood brought out maybe some of the stuff that they didn't know they had to deal with. And
well, if you're ready to go there, we can go there.
Well, I also, the other reason that I appreciate that you didn't say that is because like you were willing to just talk about your own story first, instead of kind of always deflecting on, oh, I'm a teacher, I'm a mom, I'm a, and this is how I show strength. Like, I just, I feel like women, you know, that's how we're raised, is to say, well, I am strong when I'm showing up for other people, right? When I can be strong and let other people sort of depend on me, and I can nurture the needs of other people. And I just really appreciate that your answer, you know, you just talked about your own journey with self-realization and strength. So, but I do want to go back to the grad school thing, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people that I interview that, like, or I don't interview a lot of people who pursue grad school sort of later, you know, kind of the more traditional artist path is to like go to undergrad. Well, number one, to know that you want to be an artist your whole life, to go to undergrad for art, to go to grad school right away for art. And then, you know, and that's kind of, I wouldn't say that's the traditional path of the people in our community, but rather it's the traditional white male artist's path, right? To kind of put your art in front of everything and pursue it at the beginning of your life. So it kind of lays the foundation for moving forward. And so I'm just curious about sort of that experience of, like you talked about opening the lid and how grad school was the thing that allowed you to open the lid. And I'm just curious, like, why you felt like grad school was that experience for you? Like, why not just start pursuing your art and build up a career outside of grad school?
Why not?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm curious about that. Like, what do you feel like grad school sort of provided for you?
Well, how
did you make that decision? Cause that's like a lot of money for, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, like a lot of people these days, they struggle with, should I just pursue it and be self-taught and start doing things my own way? And that's a really inspiring decision and journey to take. And then, you know, there's kind of these other people who are like, I really want the structure of a program to kind of allow me that space. So I'm curious about how you made that decision, especially considering, you know, you were 12 years into a great career. You already had two kids at that point. So, yeah.
Well, and I do think that my experience of grad school and even my decision to go to grad school was very specific to how I operate as a human and to where I was at in my life. So let me tell you.
Yes.
So I'm a recovering codependent, right? So I was definitely given all the same messaging that women get of who to serve and to put yourself last, et cetera, et cetera. And I did think, so for one, that means grad school for me, I think, was partly permission, right? And I, for better or for worse, needed permission. So I don't see that as a strength.
Right.
However, I know but myself.
Relatable. Definitely.
Yeah. Yes. And I think one thing I'm good at, when not always being good at being the person I want to be, I'm good at like working my way into the situations or the experiences or getting the help that I need to get closer to where I want to be. And I had a feeling grad school would be that. Second, I didn't, because of our financial situation, and because of all those unknowns about grad school, I found a program that funded me.
Okay.
Right? So I went to Indiana University where I was paid, and my tuition was covered, and I was teaching there. And that was kind of amazing, right? like that allowed our family to move without too much stress. My husband was working from home. So there's that. Also, my experience of motherhood was very hard. My kids are now 16 and 14. I have a son who's 16 and my daughter who's 14. Which is its own thing. But what I love, Kaylin, like my heart just is so happy. And I'm for this Artist Mother podcast, because when I had children, I had never felt more lost, alone, or sad in my life. And I thought, I don't know why I thought this. I think I thought this because our network between mothers is so poor, but I thought I would be having babies and being at home and finally like going back into my art making. And what I quickly discovered was that that was like the most self-harming experience of, you know, like strapping my son to my back with my cool sling tie it yourself map, because I was like total hippie mom and yeah, I'll just strap him to my back and I get out my clay and I'm like trying to sculpt. And oh my gosh, I just got angry. I just got angry at all the interruptions and the lack of sleep. I'm not a good sleeper. So, and I was postpartum, and there were other things, of course, happening in my life. So really, that were not good. So for 4 years, plus birth, right? The whole get your body giving birth, which I did twice, and then recovering from that.
With chronic back pain.
Chronic back pain. It was just really incredibly sad, lonely, hard time for me. And I stopped sculpting for 6 years. Not for 6 years. It couldn't have been. It was like five years. How old was my daughter when we moved here? Six. So yeah, 4 years. The good news,
which is, let's normalize that. Pause. Yeah. Let it sink in. This is a normal part of people's path. If you're feeling that anger and pressure, it's okay to take a break.
Right. It's okay to take a break. And that was terrifying. That was so terrifying to, I would look for people to tell me that sometimes. There weren't a lot, my circle of mother friends at that time were not artists, which really also was unfortunate, because just that need to get alone, right? To make your work. I didn't have many people in my life that could recognize that struggle. But at some point I did, the only way to sanity was realizing it's okay. And noticing, beginning to notice more, you know, the Louise Bourgeois of the world that made work until they were 94. And like my aunt was an artist who was always making work. I mean, it was like church banners and paintings and stuff, but she just starting to recognize that it's a continuum and that I was hurting myself by trying to hold it so tightly.
I wonder too if there was already that pressure for you feeling like, you know, I have a full-time job that's not in the arts. And so you, even if you loved your interior design job and it felt relatable, like maybe you already had sort of that, I'm already not doing what I want to be doing. And so then to think, oh, I'm going to have this more time at home because I'm a mom, and then that doesn't really work out. And so just kind of that compounded.
Yeah.
Like stress of.
Yeah. It was a lot. And too much. And so also though, then that when I finally did, I like this story. We suffered, my husband's in the financial world. he's a algorithmic programmer dude. So the crash of 2008 to 2011 kind of was really hard on our family. And he made an action, which I kind of think about. He decided to go run the Leadville 100, which is a ultra marathon in Leadville, Colorado, where you run 100 miles in 24 hours.
Oh my
God. Oh, I love it. It's just so stupid. But what was so wonderful, because so he decided to do this. I decided, damn it, I'm going to apply to a residency. So I applied to Haystack and got in their work study program. And like, we were kind of paralleling this, like going towards change in our lives, you know? And it was at that residency where the group there, the artist group there, looked at me and was like, what do you mean you can't go to grad school? And I was like, really? I can, you know? And I have this 5-year-old that I've left for 2 weeks to go to this residency. And there's all that mother shame/guilt/ relief in doing that, but mm-hmm. then also you don't even get to enjoy the experience as much as you think you will because of all that.
Mm-hmm. Preach.
There's no winning, you know. There's no winning. I love
think
it.
We should get t-shirts. There's no artist mother. There's no
winning. There's no
You know, if you know, if you know, you know, right? Isn't that an acronym now these days? IK. I don't know. I think I see that. And I'm like, I think that means if you know, you know. All right. I digress.
Well, the point is that act, which then he did do, which also then showed me who I was married to, which was very helpful because, you know, we'd been married for whatever, 15 years. And mm-hmm. I thought I knew him, but apparently I he's a way more intense individual than I realized. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. And so it's helpful to know your partner and mm-hmm. what they're capable of. And then once I got accepted into grad school with the full ride, he also had to kind of be like, okay, let's do this. And mm-hmm. he became Mr. Mom mm-hmm. For 3 years. And really, because he worked from home and because he is who he is, because I struggle so hard with that split brain mm-hmm. to this day, I struggle with that. Like you need to go home mm-hmm. versus you need to be in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
He really supported and helped me. I mean, it was hard. The kids still talk about how I was gone for 3 years, even though I was there, you know, mm-hmm. and I still feel guilt about that, mm-hmm. To a certain extent, but it was okay. Mm-hmm. And they're fine. They're, mm-hmm. they're good. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that act, that great, leap forward that he made, and then also that I made, it was really exciting later mm-hmm. in life to kind of push into something new and then see change happen. And now we live in Bloomington and I teach.
And who knew?
Crazy.
I definitely love that. My husband and I have had similar experiences of kind of mirroring sort of the passion and the intensity and like being open to change in sort of each other. And then like suddenly, you know, your life, you look back a year and your life is suddenly completely different than to when you kind of like, I can think of distinct moments where, you know, we've sort of done that. So it's really nice to hear that, you know, kind of reflected in your story.
Yeah.
And thank God for partners. You know, I mean, Melanie, you and I talked about this when we had lunch and we found out we have all this stuff in common. Like we grew up in log cabins and we are deconstructing evangelicalism and we have these kind of similar experiences. But a part of our conversation that I really loved was, just kind of getting married really young and knowing a lot of friends who got married young and looking back, you know, 10, 15 years later and really not even understanding how you're still together, but finding like considering all that's changed and how you changed as individuals and somehow that changing happened on a trajectory that felt similar and thank God because, you know, I don't know. It's just,
It feels somewhat miraculous, honestly, right?
Yes.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared color-coded calendar. A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal work and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda.
And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the Family Organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's app store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communications simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. Switching gears back to sort of your art practice a little bit, Melanie, tell me what it was like when you were working full time living in Chicago. Like, how did you kind of continue to carve out time for your practice enough? You know, obviously you were doing something right because you got a full ride into a grad program while, you know, you weren't, it wasn't like I said, it wasn't right out of undergrad and, you know, you had a lot going on in your life. So I guess kind of how did you carve out time for your practice when you were still sort of finding your voice as an artist and had a lot of other things going on?
Yes, that's a good question. Well, the one thing I did manage to do actually throughout my kids, like before baby and then a little bit after baby, a little bit, is I would go to, because I did the figure and I really wanted to learn the figure, but I was not going to be going to New York Academy of Art, at least anytime soon. And I also knew I would get kind of bogged down by that very, very, very academic study of the figure, though I admire that greatly. So what I did instead is I would do week-long workshops with Western American cowboy artists of the Great West. and actually it was kind of brilliant. I could go, like my in-laws lived in Colorado, so I could go, we could stay with them, they would watch the kids. Mm-hmm. And I would drive up to Loveland every morning super early and make art all day with the feedback and anatomy lessons of these Western artists.
Wow. I'm glad I asked this. This is interesting.
And even at one point, David Klass, who teaches anatomy, I don't know if he teaches at the New York Academy or he's still teaching anatomy, écorcher in New York. He came and I took a workshop with him, which I now teach écorcher sculpting to my students here at IU, which is really fun and tedious for them. But that was how I at least kept with the figure. I also did a few portrait kind of commission things. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, this was very strange. I was asked, because I was a part of a church at that time, and I was asked to sculpt during worship.
Oh, interesting. Like performative.
Like performative.
Like the potter and the clay. I could totally see that. Like if you were in the church that I grew up in, they would totally have you be doing that. So
right. Yeah. But it was, and I did it for a while.
That's kind of cool though. Like a opportunity to do your work, you know, even the public aspect of it is weird, but like the,
I had an hour to myself.
Right.
Basically, right. If I could tune them out and then all that energy, right, of being watched, which is just so weird.
Yeah.
But so all of that is a bit, yeah. But what's great about that is also that was, I was asked to do that in the midst of that, like just desert of not being able to sculpt. And I got pretty creative up there. Like it was a very, I just did whatever the heck I wanted to do. Yeah, I don't know. That was a very interesting experience.
The integration though of art and life, I think is, you know, sometimes the only way that you can make it work in certain seasons, you know?
Yes. And
like adapting your practice. That's why a lot of artists' mothers adapt their practice to be textile based, because it's like, right. I can bring a quilt to a soccer game or, right. you know, and especially your practice, which I want to hear a little bit more about, like the logistics of what your studio practice looks like. You know, I would imagine it being a sculptor, it's harder to break those things down probably.
And at the church, what was kind of fun, one of the aspects ended up being, oh my gosh, I ended up teaching a figure workshop for the church. It was hilarious.
That's kind of cool.
I know. I also, because I would use plasticine and aluminum wire armatures. So I would just build things out of plasticine. And then the kids would come up and they would build things. Or I would sometimes, like this one day, I just made a giant treehouse and all of the kids in the church just came and started like making, like adding onto this.
Cool.
So that was lovely. I also at that time was, I started teaching at the Oak Park Art League. And I started teaching figure sculpture there and portrait sculpture there. So I was doing that. That was my Tuesday night getting to hang with some of the artists in Oak Park, which was wonderful. And then I also joined, in order to build my portfolio for grad school, I joined a local clay center. And I just, you know, I had a table or I had a, no, I didn't even have a table. You have a shelf. That's all you have. And that's where I did it. I built my portfolio based on a theme and it worked.
Amazing.
You know? Yeah. It's,
I love that kind of connection to sort of community-based outlets, really, to stay engaged in your practice. Of course, my mind goes to people who don't live in places like Chicago, right? Like as a rural, like I've lived my whole life in rural areas where, you know, driving 2 hours to see a good gallery show is like normal. But I still think there's, you know, there is art community to be found kind of everywhere, even if it's not sort of that higher end, like, you know, art community that you would call, like, I don't know, more art world, like galleries and things like that. But there's still people making art everywhere.
Everywhere.
Right? So
everywhere.
You know, I think you can always find something to plug into, even if you're reading art in America and they're, you know, like doing paint by number, like if you just find an hour and a group of people to make work with, like that can be kind of your outlet for sustaining your practice through some of these seasons that are just really hard.
Well, and it keeps you a bit, and maybe teaching does this still for me. I hadn't really taught before the Oak Park Art League, which wasn't hoity-toity. Mm-hmm. Like I was teaching plumbers, electricians, people with epilepsy, like very random group of people that just wanted to learn about the figure.
I love that.
And it's still kind of that way in a public university. It's like just wild, the breadth of students that I get who are interested in taking sculpture.
Yeah. I especially feel like kind of as the traditional 8-to-5 workforce model has shifted over the last 10 or 20 years, sort of in our society, like that is in a way opening up educational models to include other people. Like there's all these low res programs, there's, you know, sort of like more non-traditional ways to experience education, which means that the people coming into the programs are not just 22-year-olds. You know, fresh out of undergrad. So, that's it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Nice.
Okay, so last question before we do our final five. I just want to hear a little bit more about your art practice. Like, as a sculptor, you make these huge, laborious, time-consuming, resource-consuming, pieces. And I'm just wondering more logistically, like, what is sort of the breakdown of your studio practice? Because I can't imagine that, like, every day you're in there working on a huge bronze sculpture or, like, so do you incorporate drawing? Do you work on, like, smaller scale stuff? Like, what kind of, like, give me sort of some, like, a vision into what are the different ways that your art practice breaks down?
Yes. I absolutely have kind of different sections, and the dream, right, is to have like a three giant room studio for all the different processes, as we all dream. But I
just get your husband to run another ultra marathon, and then maybe, you know,
maybe something will grow from that, right?
Yep.
Okay. I'll suggest
be like,
that.
Honey, it's time. It's time for me to get a better studio. You need to go do your race and
go do something.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
That's funny. Okay. So I work with, I love clay. So I still work in clay, and I generally build maquette size work to begin with. Like right now I'm working on a toddler series, which is my beast toddlers. I gave my, the last piece that I felt like really captured where I was at and was asleep in the boat, which is a mother giving birth piece. And I like my logical progression and also just the fumbling experience. I've been wanting to capture that. So toddlers is where I'm working now. And they're pretty much still at this point, really small. And I'm part of my journey is trying to figure out, especially living in Indiana, is how to show this work and how to transport it, and store it. And really it's difficult. Being a sculptor is difficult. It takes an enormous amount of energy, space, finances, material. It's hard. I'll just say that it's hard.
Yeah.
So I do draw. It's not, drawing has never been like my favorite, but it will be like my idea place. And then once I get committed to something, then I start to build. And then, it's at least 6 months to a year of having a large thing in my space. It's nice. I just got a larger studio at school. I had them expand the door, right, so that I can get my work in and out of the door.
Amazing.
I'm limited with galleries because of that. Like typically I need a double door. I'm working on making smaller work. That's what I'm working on. Just so I can show more, honestly. And then also there's the figurative work,
store your work?
I have a storage facility.
Yeah.
I pay to store it. It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to live with some of it, but it's also hard because really all the beasts have been at least 9 feet in any one direction. And I have to think about material holding up over time, especially when you're using things like faux fur. I've shifted from like welding steel cage armatures to doing foam bodies, which I hate working with foam. I hate it for the environment. I hate because it's a mess. It's not intuitively as wonderful to work with, but I can lift it and move it. Right. It's just a constant dance.
Yeah.
It's a constant dance. But then I also do like this COVID has been, I think it was so overwhelming for my brain to try and keep teaching. I taught hybrid. I felt like my studio practice literally just like pancake. It just, it was the weirdest thing. And I had nothing but grace for that, honestly, because it was just, it was almost like watching it as an experience. And I took on a commission over COVID that's been fantastic, which is to do a portrait and a commission for the Kinsey Institute. I'm doing a life-size portrait of Dr. Kinsey for campus. So it's been kind of like, like my comfort zone is traditional figurative sculpture. I'm good at it. I know where I'm going. I don't have to like exhaust my emotions in creating it. And I think it's really helpful and exciting now to know that I can operate in either. That would say like, that's also a bit of a nerve-wracking thing to do, because I've been told like, don't you do those different processes, that will, you will get no respect from the art world, you know?
Right. But don't have a commissions tab on your website.
Don't have a commissions tab on your website. Absolutely not. Don't do the figure for that matter.
Like, don't be a woman. Don't have a uterus.
And certainly do not have children. So I've just, you know, and I won't say I'm not affected by that or afraid of those kind of hearsay things that I hear slash have been told. But I also really like the goal, really, for me, like you asked in one of your questions, like, what is success? And when I'm really honest, it's that I keep making, because I feel so damn good when I'm making, right? And that I am connected to the people that I love. And yes, I want people to value my work and see my work and respond to my work. But like, if I've got to, stay focused on my idea of success, because I'm very, it's just not helpful. Comparison is the death of joy, right? I think it was, I don't know who said that, someone. And I am guilty. I can be guilty of that. But I try to stay in my lane with who I, how I've been made, you know, like my level of energy, my level of sensitivity, my level of like need and relationship, and this need, this constant need to make, work. Like, it's the only thing that makes me, like, makes me feel fulfilled is if I'm making. That's all I know.
Yes. So. I love it. So five final questions that we always close with, just to help us get to know you a little bit better. Who's your biggest art crush?
Oh man. Can you hook me up with her? I really, my dream is to, go work for, this is a thing. Sorry, I'll need to shorten this up. Berlin de Broekier, Belgian artist. If you don't know her work, just Google it. She did Cripple Tree for the Venice Biennial a couple years ago. She works in wax with, and with horse carcasses and like messed up bodies. And she's just the most, her work just slays me. So, Berlin, I will come work for you for free. And, I don't speak Belgian, but, or French, but
they probably all speak English.
I just want a little plug here. An artist vacation for me, I went and worked for Ursula von Riddingsgard for 2 weeks. Just like this. I was like, I will come work for you. How do you, can I? Because I did meet her briefly at a at a conference. And so I'd also like to go work for Martin Puryear. Martin, do you be cool with it? Martin Puryear?
I don't think Martin
Shekiah Booker. You don't think Martin listens to that?
Not so much, but not so much. Okay. So speaking of travel, favorite place to travel or dream trip you'd like to go on?
Okay, so Bruno Walpole would be another one. He's an Italian woodcarver. So I'll go, I would like to go to Italy, because Italy's the best place to travel. So I'm just, let's go to Italy and let's learn from the Northern Italian woodcarvers who do unbelievable
Maybe we just set up an artist mother retreat in Northern Italy and learn from the workshoppers. There we go.
Okay.
All you artist mother sculptors, we'll go to Italy. Okay. Film or book that has inspired you greatly?
Yes. You know, I realized I'm reading for the like fourth or fifth time right now, which I don't really do very much. I'm reading My Name is Asher Lev by Kham Potok. Mm. You ever read that?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh.
So good.
Well, specifically from the religious background perspective, it is so good. Mm. It is such a beautiful, Kham Potok is just, he wrote The Chosen, which is the one that most people have read. But I highly recommend for the artists out there, My Name is Asher Lev. It's just a beautiful, it's a beautiful novel. And then I'll also, you know, most women on this podcast, I hope already have a copy of Women Who Run with the Wolves.
Yes.
Good. I just recommend having that by your bed.
Yep.
So when you can't sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're stressed, you just like pop it open.
Yep.
Connect, read a paragraph.
Yes. That is what that book is best for. It's just... like lucid, you know, thinking through my identity and floating in and out of, you know, is this my consciousness or is this this woman's consciousness or is this this book or is this my feelings or my thinking? I don't know. Like, I love that.
And it's really all just the story.
Yes.
It's like it's an eyelash of a tiger. It's going to be
okay. I love it. I love it.
So, yeah.
Such a good one. Okay. Favorite meal?
Vietnamese food.
Mm. Okay. Last but not least, just want to give you an opportunity to give a shout out to somebody who supports you in your work.
Oh gosh. Well, I wanted to, my crit group, I have a crit group, Fafner Adamaites and Molly Evans. We meet monthly, which is just wonderful. And my mentors, Jeff Thompson and Malcolm Smith. They saw me and believed in me, and it makes a difference.
Okay, Melanie, where can people find out more about you and your work? Website, Instagram?
MelaniePennington.com and at Melanie Cooper Pennington on Instagram. And if you want to see all my cats, at Coopin on Instagram. But you don't want to see, I mean, you know, that's just... stupid social media, whatever.
Awesome. Well, I follow you at both places and I like what I see there. So, but you know, fellow Indiana based artist mother, we gotta see the inside scoop.
I know.
The cats,
yep. The dogs.
One second.
The children.
Yep.
The children and their Mickey Mouse. That was so cute.
Yep. Here we come, being interrupted by the three-year-olds. Okay, Melanie, thank you so much for sharing. And what a great conversation. Can't wait to see you on November 6th at the opening of Painting at Night. And thank you again for jurying the show for us.
Thank you so much, Kaylin. Zeke, it's good to see you too.
Woo woo. Bye, Melanie.
Bye.
Bye.
Melanie, those...
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.